Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all of my virtual beloveds out there. This is Rusty, and you are on Living and Thriving. Today is Wednesday, the hump-to-hump day, the middle of the week. It's been cosmically and energetically just a strange week for most people. Not sure what's going on there. Maybe it's the end of the summer blues, or I have no idea, but it's been an adventure this week, that is for sure. Wanted to give lots of love and hugs to everyone out there. Know that I love you and think that you are beautiful. And it's always an adventure in our life. So, Miss Amy, what's your adventure?
Oh, I feel like silly putty, you know, when you pull it in 8,000 different directions.
Yep.
And I'm screaming in the middle going, ow.
Okay, that's a good week. That's a good week for Amy, folks.
We have those moments where, you know, and this is one thing I have to learn is how to say no.
Yes, say no. That was actually a topic that I had with my pen pal in Switzerland this morning was how do you say no and set personal boundaries. So I think we should have a radio show based on that particular topic because you and I are both so headstrong and go-getters and A-types that saying no is
not in our vocabulary.
Correct. Well, unless the kids
and it's extremely uncomfortable when we do.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yep. So saying no. That'll have to be another topic. I think that's great.
Yeah.
So today we're going to talk about the grief cycle and the stages of grief. And this particular topic has come up many, 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 many times. And as you know, for those of you who listen to us on a regular basis, 23,000 of you, it's amazing how I just don't believe in coincidence. I believe that when you hear something or see something or if it pops up at a consistent level, there's a reason. And whether you call it divine intervention or angels or I just think it's a message, a cosmic message for you to really pay attention to. And since this week has been a lot of there's been a lot of conversation in regards to grief and the cycle and how long and how short and, you know, the various opinions and healing and working through that, I thought it was a very appropriate topic for today. So,
yes, and, you know, a lot of people don't understand the stages of their grief. And what is really cool about what we're going to talk about today is recognizing those stages and then having a solution for each stage.
Trying to.
And everyone's different. So this is just, you know, not everything's going to work for everyone.
Right.
But they are suggestions. And, you know, we'd love to hear your feedback if anything helps you get through a situation or, you know, that you're in a grief cycle. And, you know, just, you know, shout out to us, send us an email, poke us on Facebook, whatever you would like to do. We'd love to hear from you.
She said poke. All right, so the number here is 347-205-9443. You can also reach us at facebook.com/celiacroads. That's mine. And just let us know, you know, what your thoughts are on the grief cycle. And we will start with anger. Now, the grief cycle is a very complex wheel of emotions and mental attitudes, thoughts. Thought patterns. So when I'm going to back it up just even a little bit further. Everyone has had some form of grief, whether it was in the form of losing a job, pets, child, parent, lover. I think lover is probably one of the most common. Grandparents, aunt, uncle, friend. And so it's a loss, whether it's a physical loss in the form of death or an emotional loss as in the breaking up of even a best friend. If you've had a best friend for a very long time and for whatever reason you have gone your opposite ways and they're no longer there, there is a grief cycle there's a process there, jobs process. So everybody's gone through some form of grief. It is a spectrum. There's, you know, real serious topics like death, breakups, relationships, job loss. And how do you bounce back from that, and what are the emotional pieces that go into it? And anger is one. Denial is another. Bargaining is another. Acceptance, guilt, hope. Now, some say that there are only five. I'm a believer of seven. So we'll go into each one. Hope and depression, those are the other ones. We'll go into each one, and that, you know, when you go through a loss, you don't necessarily become angry right away. You might be depressed right away. You might
in shock.
In denial. You might have guilt. You might try to bargain. So these stages aren't finite or like a ladder rung where A, B, C, D. It's kind of a wheel that keeps rolling, and emotionally and mentally you go in and out of each one of them.
Do you find that people may not follow that particular road, like anger, denial, bargaining? Maybe it might be denial, then anger.
Right.
Do you know
correct.
What I mean?
That's
so
what
is
I'm
that
saying.
What you mean?
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, you know, some people will go from guilt to anger to denial to bargaining to hope to depression. It really depends on the person. It depends on the severity of the situation. It depends on coping skills, which is a huge one. You know, how do you cope with adversity? How do you get through those moments? And everybody's different, and everybody has been taught by their family a different mm-hmm. way, a different strategy.
Exactly.
Have some people are more apt to seek self-help methods. Some people are more apt to go to church. Some people are more...
turn to other things.
Yeah, addictions, that's a big mm-hmm. one. Some people will withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will... I don't know.
I find some people, too, may even pretend
mm-hmm.
like the loss hasn't happened. Like, totally...
But that's a denial.
Yep, it's part of denial. But people might not think that. You know,
right.
when I tell people... Well, you're in your stage of denial. I'm not denying anything. Yes, you are. You're denying the entire situation.
Right.
So, well, that's how I can deal with it. Well,
okay.
That's your stage, you
right.
know. And
that's where you're at.
Yep.
But acknowledge that's where you're at.
Exactly.
And
that's half the battle.
Yep. So let's talk about anger a little bit. The stage is, you know, usually the first one sometimes, at least what I've seen as a coach, and going through a rough divorce, I've seen the in and outs of anger coming in, you know, then
mm-hmm.
it's denied. I've seen the stages personally and professionally. Anger usually is blaming ourselves, blaming others, blaming anything animate or inanimate.
Or a higher, whatever a higher power is.
Right. We tend to self-sabotage. We tend to close doors, whether, and that's metaphorical for those of you who will email me later going, what do you mean closed doors? Metaphorically closed doors. We'll end up being so angry that we lose sight on our job or our friendships, and we end up closing those doors. And then we turn back into the self-blame,
mm-hmm.
and that becomes a cycle as well.
And a vicious one at that.
Yes.
Because that's
vicious
really
one.
Hard. For you to come out of that cycle, because it's all about you, really.
Mm-hmm.
So the only person that really knows the real you is you.
And I think we are in a constant state of trying to understand ourselves. And I had an interesting conversation yesterday with somebody who is intimidated by dating because of consistent hurt, and
mm-hmm.
still in kind of the angry and guilt place
mm-hmm.
in his grieving process. And we were talking about ages, you know, and my thought is you spend the first 30 years trying to figure out what you mean, who you are, and then between 30 and 50-ish, you kind of get a grip on
mm-hmm.
on things a little bit. There's a little bit more grounding and
Accepting.
And then after that, you're just like, you know.
That's where I'm headed. Whatever.
I only have 30 more years left. Leave me alone. But anyway, I digress. So anger, what kinds of things can you think of that represent anger, and how would you approach someone who was in this stage?
Well, in my work, I deal with emotional release, so of course I've had this on my table many times. What I deal with anger is just let them have it.
Yep.
Have a pillow, hit it, yell at it, swear at it, get it out.
Yep.
And they look at me like I have four heads, and I'm like, seriously, you need to do this.
Right.
If you don't feel comfortable with that, go somewhere in, you know, in the middle of the night, go somewhere and scream the top of your lungs. You've got to get it out.
Right.
If you keep shoving it down, that's going to cause other emotional and physical issues, as you know.
Yep.
So my biggest thing with working with people is it doesn't matter. It's the biggest one with anger is why. The question why. Why did this happen? What could I have done to prevent it? And what I try to deal with people is you can't go back.
Nope, you cannot.
You cannot go back. And you can't, if you keep welling in your mind what you could have done, it isn't going to change
right. What's
happening. You need to focus on the present moment right now, getting yourself through these stages each day, you know, welcoming these changes because it's part of a learning process.
Well, and it's funny, I have my moments and my Yodas in my life remind me to be in the flow and stay still. That's the Buddhist way.
Mm-hmm.
And I retort with, I'm allowed to have my 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also a level of extremism that, you know, when you're surrounded by a group of healers of varying religious beliefs, and they're all, you have to have that moment. If you could imagine anger as being a big fireball in your chest, you have to let that fireball go out.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you out there who are athletic, run. Mm-hmm. Run an extra mile.
Endorphins really help.
Run an extra mile. For those of you who are artists, paint. Paint whatever. You know, don't criticize, don't judge, just get that out of your body. I'm a true believer that you leave anger, that fireball in your body, too long, you're going to end up with some form of cancer or physical illness. That's my belief. Take it or leave it.
It's hard to prove, but there is some really astonishing
scientific evidence
work about this.
Yeah, and they're coming around.
Yeah, and the thing is, with going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist,
that helps.
It helps. It's part of it,
right. But
it's not the full solution. You're talking it out, but you need to have a solution. For instance, when I used to smoke cigarettes way back when I was in my 20s, and I quit smoking, what I did those times that I was really, you know, craving the cigarette, I would do something else, like exercise, quilting.
Mm-hmm.
I did quilting. Everybody got quilts that year. But I tell people to do something, like you said,
something
that not only speaks to you, and you keep doing that and keep doing that, you will work through that emotion and will have a tool when the next time around that it comes around. Because we don't just get hurt once in our life. And we don't. And every episode is different.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know how to deal with each one of those emotions in your way to get you through it, then when these events happen, these stages go by a lot more quickly.
They don't manifest into other things inside of you. So let's talk about a little bit longer about anger in regards to, and for everyone's edification, my personal favorite stress relief is dancing. I will dance for 5 hours. I will, when I'm in a bad mood, I get a cab and I'm gone. Mm-hmm. I dance until my legs hurt and my feet are swollen. For me, that resonates. That makes me happy, and I get all of that energy out of my body. And then I can turn around and sit and process and think about the solution. Anyway, so anger. anger is a really powerful tool, and I think, you know, for those of you who watch TV, you know, I don't, but I do get little birds tweeting and telling me what kinds of things are going on in the world, volatile, violent nature, you know, the movie theater thing and the synagogue thing and all of this crazy, violent stuff. That's anger.
It absolutely is, and that's in this, and that's where it can lead to, you know, depending on the mental status of the person, you know, anger can become a weapon.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times the people that get into those states, they may not even be aware at that time. I know I've dealt with people that, you know, have been abusive to other people, and they don't even remember doing it, which is scary.
Yeah.
You know,
I live that way.
yeah, you know, whether it's that's the strongest form of denial that you can give.
So, what kinds of things? I know, and I'm being the Cheshire Cat again. And for those of you who are just signing in and don't know us very well, I like to play the devil's advocate and ask questions that I already know the answer to, but it provides a little bit of a challenge and mind expansion for you. So, what kinds of thoughts do you think would help eradicate a lot of that anger, aside from the physical piece? Because I genuinely believe in the anger stage, you need to have a physical release and
an emotional
release. And for those of us who are deeply spiritual, you know, that is all one piece.
Again, the way is finding what works for you. That's key. But some of the things that could... Like, do you mean like
self-talk?
What is it?
Because I think angry people, they're so angry that they can't see past their nose. And not only are, you know, and we're talking the grieving process to its fullest. And usually anger is the first thing. Why did you do this to me?
Yeah. Why did you do this to me?
Why?
Why did I deserve this? What did I do to deserve this?
Right.
That was a big one.
Screw you. Excuse me for those of you who have kids running around. You know, you're a poopy caca head, because a lot of people do have kids that listen to our show. There are other words that we could use. What kinds of other things can we try to replace that with?
Well, what I do with my clients and even my friends and family when they're going through something like this is I then bring out, like, I have an emotional release program. And what I do, anger also, all of these emotions also have what they call a meridian point in your body.
Right.
Okay? And like you had said, it causes a physical aspect.
Now, the meridian point, for those of you who just signed in and you don't understand, that's part of the chakra system.
Right. And it's kind of like, okay, this anger, anger actually governs a lot of systems, which is why people get very sick. So what I do is I give them what they call the way out, which is the other side. The other side of that. Okay, so instead of saying, for instance, let me see when I come up with it, like the I am's, or, you know, like I am ugly, or I am fat, or I am this. You do the opposite.
Right.
And in my world, I have aromatherapy that actually connects the limbic system in your brain. And if it's an anger from long ago, like it's stuck, because some things, it may not be something that just happened to you, something that happened to you in your childhood or, you know, earlier in your life. You need that sense of smell to actually, it's almost like a computer program to get to that part of your brain.
Right.
So I use those tools. And they work really well.
But you're talking about physical tools. I was asking about self-talk and
right,
verbal,
that's the way out. You have to hit the delete button, as I tell people.
Right.
Hit the delete button, you know, and it's hard because you notice then when you start taking notice of all of the negative self-talk that you do, how much you do. And that, another exercise you can do, which is a little bit, you know, some people don't like to do, but every single time you say something negative to yourself, write it down.
I actually, in my
and
book...
And then see how much.
Yep. that's one of the exercises in my book. We talked about that last week. But I've had clients that were so difficult about writing it down that I charge them a quarter. So every time they had something negative, I would, you got to put a quarter in the bucket.
Yeah.
At first, they were like little kids with their arms crossed. What do you mean? Yep. You did it. Quarter in the bucket. Because it really has to be that cut. Mm-hmm. It has to be that hard, fine mm-hmm. line if you want to change this behavior. So denial. Denial, denial, denial. The stage comes sometimes before anger, sometimes after. Sometimes causes isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes temporary. It's usually a defense mechanism to overwhelming emotions. So if you're feeling really, really, really super overwhelmed, it's like, okay, I'm going to pretend it's not there. Just so I can cope, just so I can get through my day. I'm pretending, I'm ignoring, I'm just not dealing with it. Denial is usually used to hide facts or avoid situations, feelings about the situations, the reality of the situation. Some people become very stoic, and this is also one place where people become quickly addicted to mm-hmm. substances. And it doesn't have to be a substance as in alcohol or drugs, but it could also be...
Sex.
That's a different topic for a different show, and I'll warn you all, because that will not be PG-13. but sex is also a great stress reliever.
And yes, it is. But too much of anything.
Can be bad. Some people become addicted to food.
Mm-hmm.
Some people become addicted to...
Shopping.
Shopping, that's a great one.
Those are
actually
instant gratification,
like
so don't I.
Some people can become addicted to fast things to get those endorphin rush, like driving really, really fast or speeding, roller coasters. That endorphin rush, which is actually, and I'm going to put my geek hat on, folks, it starts in your kidney. The cortisol shoots up to your brain, and then you get this natural high. Some people get off on that, and instead of dealing with the reality, they will continuously, purposefully seek high-risk behaviors to avoid reality.
Sounds like somebody I know.
Which person? Never mind. We'll talk later. So, you know, the stoic, and I can perfectly understand when I became divorced, I had to become stoic because he was so angry and still is, and it's been almost 2 years. The only way I could handle him is to be stoic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not in denial because I understand the situation. And
you're
I accept
just not absorbing
it,
any of the negativity.
But I'm not absorbing the negativity. So understand the stoic is pretty fluid and gray. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is. It can be.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit about denial and how you perceive denial and what methods you think are...
Well, denial is one of the harder ones, I believe, to get through because...
I can't hear you.
They can... With the clients I work with, when you hit the word denial,
mm-hmm.
they instantly... La, 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 la.
I can't hear you.
Mm-hmm. Or I find they'll agree to me to the end of the world.
Right.
But they're still in denial because they're not accepting it. They're just, they're yupping me. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, I hear you. Yep.
So,
I understand. But what like you said, you hit the nose on the head when you said denial about avoiding most of the denial is avoiding the confrontation.
Whether it's emotional confrontation, mental confrontation, mm-hmm. or person confrontation.
They're avoiding it. And so what I try to help people, like a lot of the denial things is it's not my fault, it's not my problem, which in some cases that's very appropriate,
mm-hmm.
but in some cases it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends, on the situation, but overall denial is really, I call it the anchor, because it sinks way down,
mm-hmm.
and all of the emotions stick with that denial, and the denial just stays there and stays there and stays there. It's so hard to remove that anchor,
mm-hmm.
Because ultimately they think if they're in denial, they're not acknowledging the problem like we try to tell them. Oh, don't pay attention to the negativity. But, you know, if you have a financial problem or you have a problem with a child that, you know, if not handled properly, they could harm themselves or what have you, you can't be in denial because all it does is make the problem bigger. And that's what I tell people. You can either deal with it now or you can deal with it 5 years from now, and it's going to be perpetually much worse.
Because you're going to end up denying many other things
and you don't,
along the way.
Yeah, and you, yep. I was reading a book about that same thing you just said, about when we're in denial, we're in those stages, we miss so many
mm-hmm.
opportunities and so many, you know, yes, you may have, you know, lost a best friend for whatever reason, but you're in denial or trying to still bring that person back in your life that you don't see the other three people that could have come into your life. You know,
we do put blinders on.
Mm-hmm,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So bargaining, this is my favorite stage. I am, and not favorite as in I want to live in this stage, but favorite because people don't recognize it. And when you're coaching or you're working therapeutically with somebody who's going through the grieving process, bargaining becomes like breathing air
mm-hmm.
in most of these situations. And it's not, I think it's part of denial. That's a very fine line
but
for
me. But it does
me.
Have to be treated separately.
But it does absolutely have to be recognized separately. Bargaining is the process of you're trying to grasp at every straw. You are placating. And you actually touched a little bit with the yipping.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, it's definitely along those lines of I know when I fell really ill and I only had a few hours to live, and I prayed to God, please, God, don't take my life away. I'll do anything. That's bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely bargaining. Let's see, what else?
Or with pain. If you just take this pain from me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do anything. I'll go to church every Sunday. I will,
mm-hmm.
you know, I will do this if you just take this pain from me, whether it be a physical or emotional pain.
Right.
And that's a big one. That's a bargaining where they're offering to do something that may, and the other thing when I talk about bargaining, it's okay to bargain in your mind.
Right.
But it has to be something that's totally
realistic
and doable, because if you're setting a goal that you know you can't achieve, you're setting yourself up for failure all over
right.
again. And then you go back into
denial
and anger.
And back to anger and denial. So bargaining, I see as a life coach, and often when you're really, really, really at your very last moment, and I've had friends who have lost their parents to incredible, you know, cancers and whatever, and you know realistically that you're on your final hours, but they will beg and they will plead. And then they go into denial. Then they're angry because nothing's working, because here's the reality. Unfortunately, the time is the time.
Mm-hmm.
So bargaining's a huge one. Boyfriends or girlfriends in relationships that were deeply passionate can bargain with their partner, which can at times, I've seen, become stalking.
Mm-hmm.
Obsessive types of behaviors. Trying to grab that person back and what they had back. Unfortunately, the reality is if you don't deal with that situation and you don't really honestly take a check on your intrapersonal and interpersonal pieces, it's never going to get fixed. Whatever caused the breakup remains, but now there's this another level of kind of this obsessive, weird, stalky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Jealousy.
I've seen
type,
that.
You know. And then you go back into anger and denial, and now we go into
the
guilt.
The wonderful trio.
Well, again, it's very fluid. It's what most people don't understand is the grieving cycle is a very fluid cycle. It's not, they're interwoven.
They're intertwined, and the thing is when they're intertwined like that, they're not easily recognized on their own. It kind of,
right.
they're all jumbled into one big emotion or action or, you know, behavior.
Yep. So pipe in, guys. We have a little less than an hour left on this topic, and I'd love to hear your version and how you cope and how you, you know, deal with these stressful situations. We are here to give you ideas and expand your mind a little bit and to get you to think. And when you call in, you can definitely help with that. The number here is 347-205-9443. You're talking to Rusty. That's me.
Amy, that's me.
And Living and Thriving with Rusty. So let's talk about guilt. I'm kind of skipping around a little bit, but I think that's very appropriate because what happens.
Yeah.
So guilt is a really unique stage, I think. It's one of guilt and...
And it's the most lingering, I think.
Can be. It can be the most scarring. But that's also self-talk and not having power over the situation or yourself or your feelings. So I think this will be a little bit of a longer conversation. So guilt is a stage that can fuel anger and bargaining. Somehow we end up feeling like this is our fault. We did it. We're stupid. We suck.
We're being punished.
We're being punished. Bad karma. We're not tall enough. We're not pretty enough. We're not smart enough. All of these things. And whether, you know, it relates to the particular situation or not, these thoughts come. The biggest one, especially when it comes to death or divorce, breakups, is we didn't do enough to change the situation. Mm-hmm. We failed. We shoulda, coulda, woulda, and didn't. Somehow we hurt those around us. And this one is really an interesting stage because this one also can cause isolation
mm-hmm.
because you end up feeling so sorry for yourself. What do you call it? You call it a pity party.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't even relate to any other human or animal existence. You can't relate to, you're a bit embarrassed, ashamed, mm-hmm. mortified, dirty.
Mm-hmm.
That's another word that I've heard a lot through coaching. I feel dirty. I feel ashamed. I feel less than. So guilt is a big one, and it can fuel anger, it can fuel bargaining, and it absolutely fuels depression, which we'll get to. So I think guilt has a lot to do with self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
I think
absolutely.
Guilt has a lot to do with insecurities, fears. I think guilt is very powerful.
It is, and the thing is, you know, I'm not getting on a whole religious thing, but the way that a lot of us in this country are brought up and spiritually, they it's like an injection of guilt.
Right.
Injection. Everything you do, you're made to feel guilty about.
Right.
So that, I think, you know, I've gone through that kind of stage myself where, you know, exploring other belief systems could be considered blasphemous, is the word that they use. So I don't think guilt just necessarily comes from that instance. There's a lot more to it.
I think
you
guilt,
bring more from what you're already feeling
right.
guilt into that situation,
right.
which has nothing to do with it.
Right. Guilt is definitely something that is an influence by other people. We're not born guilty. We're not born ashamed. We're born naked with our little fannies hanging out.
Imperfect
and beautiful and happy and wise and you know, as beautiful as you can be. Over time, through various situations, and I do absolutely believe that your environment plays a huge role causing the seeds of guilt.
And how you deal with things.
And so when you become, you know, when life strikes you with its adversity, those little seeds of guilt that have been planted over the years through various sources, not just religious, you know, could be parents,
aunts, one
uncles.
Example.
Yep.
Yeah.
Those flowers start to sprout because you are already weak. You already feel weak. You're hurt. You need to figure out how to feel better because, gosh, who doesn't want to love? Who doesn't want to have, you know, this eternity of happiness and love and bliss? That's what we strive for every day.
Mm-hmm.
So those little seeds start popping up. Now, when somebody's feeling like that, how do you weed that garden? How do you weed the guilt out of your beautiful, blissful garden?
First of all, when you're dealing with guilt, you have to get, okay, so why do you feel that way? Why do you feel guilty about that? They have to share. They have to. So every situation is a little different in how some people I can do the emotional release, you know, I have a script. And what I do is I give them, you know, a mantra that helps replace that negative self-talk. I will begin there. And I begin with one emotion at a time. Because if you try to handle it all in one swoop, you're not gonna gain any progress or anything because you're dealing with too much. So I let them deal with that one. And the guilt, you know, some of it may be absolutely true and you can own it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain how you do this. But when you own that guilt and accept it about yourself, and then I go through a program where I teach them how to let it go in a loving way. Or I give them one mantra that I tell everybody. I release and let go all that no longer serves me in a positive and productive way.
Amen.
Every single time that you have a negative thought, you replace it with that. Because if it's not creating a positive change or a positive entity in your life, or it's not producing a productive change in your life, then why would you want it in your life?
Well, and I think I'm going to carefully restructure what you said because it could be taken out of context. Guilt is not something that you did.
No.
It's the ownership of your actions in that particular situation is what she's trying to say. So, yes, if you were to, you know, like in my divorce, I'm absolutely, positively on board that I had my own responsibility, my own actions that, you know,
but letting
made
it go and,
difficult.
And letting it be
right.
in the past and right. letting it go, accepting it. You have to accept it for
you
what
to,
it is.
You have to accept your personal behaviors, acknowledge it, understand that it's a lesson, you know, okay, so I'm a little bit thick-headed, so I'm going to own that and be more aware of my stubborn nature, be more aware that I don't say no, and make a better effort at changing that behavior in a comfortable way.
little steps, you
little
know, that
steps,
you're
yeah.
comfortable with, and as you become more comfortable with it, then there isn't the uncomfortableness because I guess self-righteous isn't the right word for it,
right.
but you know what I mean. Like, you're confident in yourself that this is not the right thing for you, you know.
Right.
Or if there's someone that deals with, with someone that they're easily manipulated or easily coaxed into doing things and easily, it doesn't matter how they feel about it. They feel in their own that they have to do this for this person in order to honor them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one that I'm seeing a lot of is people being more accommodating of others than their own self. And that's another. And then they get the guilt because they're taking care of themselves when in reality, in order to be able to nurture someone else, you have to take care of yourself. And that's a hard one for people to understand. But when they feel that and they see it happening, it's almost like
it's like reading a dirty
it's
book.
It's the aha moment. You know, it's like, wow, that worked. Okay,
right.
I'm going to do it again. And
right.
it becomes easier. And then you're more comfortable with saying no, which has not been comfortable for me for a very long time.
Yeah,
and
me either.
Becoming more, you know, I still have some uncomfortableness about it, but I say, okay, I'm uncomfortable. It's okay that I'm uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable means you're growing. That means the
right.
shoes aren't fitting your root anymore.
Yeah, and you're going outside the box.
That's right. So give us a call at 347-205-9443. You're chatting with Rusty.
And Amy.
And Amy here on Living and Thriving on Humpty Hump Day, the 8th of August. Can you believe it? Unbelievable.
Mm.
All right. So one of my one of the stages that not all of the therapeutic world agrees with, but I have yet to have proof that it doesn't exist, It's the hope stage. Now, the hope stage is a tricky little bugger. It likes to wine and dine you and kind of tap into that denial place, and it kind of, you know, massages denial a little bit and makes it fluffy and comfortable and happy, and you go out and buy a race car, or you're really hedonistic, which we all know I have been. You go out by race car, you're recently divorced, and you find the, you know, youngest model that you can find to start dating, to have the bracelet on your arm to feel, you know, invigorated. And we've all heard these stories, this hope phase, or what some people call the whoopee phase.
Well, the boy, are you dumb.
But it happens.
It does.
This is a part of the grieving cycle. So you'll be in this whoopee, hedonistic, like crazy, going out buying a super expensive car. And
Think you're 20 again.
Because
they feel like they have to start over. So when they do it in the wrong way.
Right. So the hope stage is where you get to where you, you know, the depression lifts a little bit. You're feeling like the main source of your emotional diet is play, freedom. You start feeling new beginnings. And some people just take it way on, you know, way overboard, mm-hmm. and end up becoming in debt, end up living the high life so much.
And with outside of your means.
Outside of your means, outside of what your body can physically handle. I've seen people go out and buy sports cars and literally have parties every single day as though it's their last day of their life, which I'm not knocking it. It's your path, but, you know, there's also an extreme part of the whoopee stage that we have to be really, really careful of, and I think it also taps into a little bit of denial. So you're replacing the guilty feelings and the depressive feelings with things and activities that are really not like you.
Right.
So the hope stage can be wonderful if controlled.
But it
also can go the other way where you'll go back into the anger stage and the guilt stage.
And what they are is they're little instant gratifications of happiness.
Right.
Like shopping, like you said, the sports mm-hmm. car and everything. I know some people that, you know, when you buy something new and you're really excited about it, and it could be a little thing.
Yeah.
So that little thing made you happy. So if you, if I keep doing this, and, in your subconscious brain, you're not even aware that you're doing this.
Right.
You know, these little instant gratifications, it's also a sense of control. You know, well, I wouldn't have normally bought that, but I'm going to now because I deserve it, you know.
And I have nobody, my favorite one, especially with divorcees, is, and nobody can tell me I can't.
Right.
Right? So it's this control thing. You're trying to control mm-hmm. and kind of make a stance as to your independence and your new freedom. You can't tell me what to do. I hear that one all the time. Really? Not telling you what to do, but you might want to slow down a little bit.
Yeah, well, like I will say to people, okay, so say it was a relationship breakup,
mm-hmm.
okay, and they went out and they spent this and this.
Yeah.
I would ask them, okay, if you were still in that relationship and it was a comfortable, nurturing relationship, would you go out and buy that, like that impulsive?
Mm-hmm.
And if they say no, then I'm, well, this is part of your grieving process, and we mm-hmm. need to, it's okay for you to splurge a little bit, but you have to be, in control of it.
Right.
You know, me splurging is, you know, going out to dinner, or, I don't splurge a lot. I'm not a material girl.
Yeah, not either.
But when you find someone who is like me, who isn't a material girl, and they start being materialistic,
mm-hmm.
that's a big flag because that's not like them. So that's how I bring kind of reality. Would you, in a perfect world, would you normally do that?
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, then why are you doing it? Because it's not serving any different purpose.
Well, and what I found over the years is that people who are in the whoopee phase or hope phase, the technical term is hope, I personally call it the whoopee phase.
Whoopee!
I'm having fun.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even realize they're doing it.
No, they don't. And then I also find with some of them, not all of them, but some of them, when you try to talk to them about that, you are attacking them.
Yes,
you
that's
are,
true.
Oh, so you're telling me I don't deserve that? So then that goes into the self-talk and the denial and all that. It just, that whole circle starts coming round again.
And it's even more interesting because you will find that you go from the whoopee phase back to the anger phase.
Or right into depression.
Or right into depression, which
and
is where
true.
We're going, is right into depression. So,
and a lot of people don't recognize that probably a good, I hate to throw this big number out there, but there's probably about 70% of us that struggle with depression.
Actually, when my book is finished, I believe that I have the statistics on there. And I think it was 79.
Was it 79?
I think it was 79%.
That's
sad. And the divorce ratio is up to 72. Yeah. So different show, different topic. Mm-hmm. Sorry, we digress as we always do. So depression. This is the stage that is chronic sadness. You feel heavy. Your body feels heavy. Your mind is heavy. You're sad. You cry. Males cry too. So, you know, don't think that it's just a female thing. But we all will lie in bed and cry for a
mm-hmm.
day, days, whatever. You're tired. You don't want to be with anybody. You totally isolate yourself. And then guess what? You have three friends that come to play. Self-pity, anger, and guilt. And they like to hang out with you during this time. So depression's a real big one because anger, guilt, and denial love depression. They are BFFs.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love to keep you there. And I will not in any way, shape, or form say that they're bad, because I won't.
Mm-hmm.
Professionally, I don't think that these emotions are bad.
They're not. They're part of a process.
They are part of our process, and I think guilt, anger, denial, depression, those are all instamatic ways of us trying to protect ourselves.
It's how you react to it.
It's
that's
how,
important.
Right. And depression is a very tricky, 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 tricky one because this is where you get caught. You can stay in what I call the emotional quagmire, which is your place of depression, where if you imagine a huge swamp with every sadness and every hurt and every nasty comment and every criticism and every pain that you've ever received throughout your life, it all lives in the swamp. And sometimes we go to visit that swamp. Sometimes we hang out there. Every single one of us has, for whatever reason, we've hung out in our swamp. I call it the emotional quagmire. Sometimes people get lost in their swamp and they can't imagine a way out. And that's where it gets dangerous. That's where addictions become deeper. That's where
suicidal thoughts.
Suicidal and the suicide rates have increased, and especially with our soldiers. But that's a different show.
Mm-hmm.
So depression is a stage that is normal. It's natural. All of these stages are normal and natural. So don't feel guilty if you're going through that. Understand what you're going through. And understand that you can pick yourself back up. You've done it before. You'll do it again. We all
and,
have.
And the but resolution for you is unique.
Mm-hmm.
And give yourself that. Give yourself
yep.
that, you know, I need to find what works for me, and that's okay. Because,
yep.
you know, I suggest things to people, but I tell the people that I work with to share with me, because I'm only going by what has worked for other people. That doesn't
right.
necessarily mean it's going to work for you. We're going to try this. Tell me how it makes you feel. If this isn't going to work for you, we'll try something else. Because everybody's different in how, you know, and I'm not going to give you an exercise to do that you're totally, totally not
against, right.
either against or just aren't going to do. It has to be
something that resonates with that
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I also am a true believer and it's coming from experience, professionally and personally, that you have to have that time.
You do.
You have to sit
you
in your emotional
quagmire.
You have
to be there for a little while.
And you have to hang out. And you have to acknowledge. And you have to see the hurt and the pain and think about it and journal and paint. Those are the methods that I use. Go and sit and meditate on the beach. It's an important phase, but it's also very dangerous because people can get stuck. And that's where it becomes tricky. So how do you unstick someone? Because if you say the wrong thing, it's going to dig them further in their quagmire. If you don't do anything at all, they could stay in their quagmire. So how do you reach and pull somebody?
That's a tough one.
It is. I do it every day.
It's a tough one because, I had a situation recently where I was dealing with what you just said, the isolation, pulling away from everything you love, everything, mm-hmm. everybody you love, and just being alone and isolating yourself from everything. And mm-hmm. everything is bad. Everything is not good for you. These people aren't good for you. This isn't good for you. And they're just in that icky, swampy place.
Right.
So with this particular situation, and again, it's not the solution for everyone, but with this particular, I had to let them be there, like you said.
Yeah.
I had to let that person be in that. But I also, in a gentle way, gave them, if you're going to stay in this place, I'm not staying with you.
Right. Exactly.
So my life, I'm going to continue doing what I want to do. If you want to come with me, you can.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to. And you can sit in your quagmire if you want, but you're missing out on this.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's not like I'm pointing a finger saying, you have to do this in order to not feel this way.
But you're checking in, and I think that's,
mm-hmm.
I think everybody has to go through these emotions and really, really understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, you can't point a finger and say,
but
this is what you have to do to feel
right.
better, because you don't know that.
But
you're
you
not,
check in.
Yep, you do.
You check in with your friends. You check
mm-hmm.
in with your, whomever. If it's a nasty divorce or a breakup, you probably don't check in, but what I would do is check in with mutual friends to have
it
them check
in. It also helps
in.
You, too, because
absolutely.
If something were to happen to that person, whether it be, then you start your guilt train.
All over
okay?
again. Yep.
So, and it's not like, you shouldn't feel obligated, because then you're going outside your own
responsibility.
Right.
Yeah.
So check in. You don't have to get involved in all of the drama that may be going on with your
right.
friend's life or whoever you're dealing with. But you just come in like Rusty does with me. She doesn't sit there and lecture me for hours. She'll just say, okay, well, when you're ready, we can move on. And it makes me stop and think, okay, so she didn't tell me how I was going to fix it.
It's not my job.
Right. And so you have to, the reason why I said that is because I wanted you to say just that. It's
yeah.
not your job to fix them.
Right.
And that is a huge thing I have a problem with.
Right.
Because I feel like I need to fix everybody. But I'm pulling back and learning I can't fix everybody, but I can still let them know that I'm there for them.
Yep. Pat on the
but
back,
I don't have to be
five,
in their drama situation.
Right.
And the other thing is, when you're dealing with taking care of yourself and your own depression, you need to not put yourself in those situations again that are going to bring you there.
Ah, that's where you and I will butt horns, and they're going to be locked, because I don't believe in any way, shape, or form that it's an intentional act of self-destruction. I believe that shit happens, excuse my French or German, and adversity happens. And
oh, yes, I'm not trying to say that. I'm
so
saying, like,
you
addictive
don't even
behaviors. Like, if you're trying to be, I didn't want to just come right out and say it, but if you're beating
yeah,
with an
it.
Addiction or a person,
mm-hmm.
like, behavioral, if you're trying to change, like, for instance,
right.
if you have an addiction,
right.
you have to exclude yourself from the addictive people in your life.
Gotcha.
See, you
that's
see
what I
saying?
Heard. Yep.
Yep.
Okay. I don't think, I don't think
I was
depression,
trying to be more general, so.
Yeah, not with me. I don't think that depression is something that you do to yourself. I think it's an end result of something that has happened. And
it's cumulative.
Absolutely cumulative. And that's where it gets really dangerous. But mm-hmm. the best thing that you can do for people with depression is to step outside and around them and mm-hmm. give them as much support as you can without having personal ownership, because you can be drug into it yourself.
I mean, right, that, and then they play the blame game.
Yeah, then they go back into that cycle. Ah,
you know,
it's crazy madness.
It is. It's crazy. And sometimes you get to take a deep breath, and there are relationships in your life that you just have to let go of.
Yep, and I've actually really come to terms with that over the last
It's not an
years.
Easy thing
it's
to
hard.
Do. I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
You have to let go.
You have to let go.
And what no longer serves you.
You know, when you, and that's part of growing. And it's not that person that means something to you at that point. And maybe some way along the line they'll come back in your life. But at that moment in time, if you feel you've done what you can, and you feel like they're dragging you in a way that you don't want to be, then you're going to have to separate somewhat from that situation, or you're not going to move out of that.
Well, and to take a little curveball, you know, it's I am a huge believer that accidents and coincidences and adversities, I just don't believe that the words are real, the way we think about them are real. I think that these events happen for a reason. There's a purpose. There's a lesson. And for whatever we learn out of that, if we go into life and we go into situations understanding that this is a lesson to learn, I think it's easier to get out of these stages.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easier to cope.
Than to just push it down, because when you're pushing it down and you appear that mm-hmm. you're moving, you're not really working with it, and that actually causes more damage.
Physical, emotional, mental
mm-hmm.
damage, absolutely. So one of the, you know, the clear reminder here, and we have one more acceptance to go through, but so far what we've talked about is anger, denial, hope, or the whoopee phase, depression, guilt, bargaining. So for right now, if everybody can just kind of sit back and go, okay, what are they trying to tell us? And what I'm pointing out is the clear reminder of, you know, knowing yourself, really, really knowing yourself. And it's absolutely, totally cool if you want to hang out in your EQ, your emotional quagmire, and sit there and just have your pity party, as Amy would call it. I think it's important.
You do need to have them once in a while.
And it's okay if you want to scream. And it's okay if you have your temper tantrum because you're angry. And it's okay that you feel guilty. But acknowledge that. Know yourself well enough to know that a lot of this guilt and grief is fueled by your own self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
So really know yourself. Learn to know yourself. Learn to love yourself. Learn to forgive yourself. And that is huge, especially Amy and I are notoriously hard on ourselves, and it's hard to forgive
mm-hmm.
ourselves, and really that's a process to learn.
I think forgiveness is hard for a lot of people in all different aspects, because
absolutely
part of forgiveness is acceptance, which is the next thing we're going into.
I'm teeing you up, baby, teeing you up. Cheshire cats in the window. And understanding that healing yourself is very important. The ego, a fractured ego, that plays a huge part in our self-talk, that fuels anger, it fuels guilt, it fuels depression, best friends.
Fear.
Fear. What is fear?
False evidence appearing real.
Aha. Interesting. So you didn't fail anything. You're not worthless at anything. You are beautiful, and you are love, and you skinned your knees, and you made mistakes. And we all have breakups and deaths and, you know, the serious parts of life. It hurts. It hurts big. It hurts amazingly big. And ego is there to try to keep you from continuing on and moving on, just to give up. And for those of you who listen to the show, the reason why you listen to the show is because you got a little part of you that doesn't want to give up. Good gravy. I don't know if you guys heard that, but somebody was rocking out to some boom boom.
Yeah, and they'll be wearing a hearing aid before long.
So you have a little bit of hope. You have a little bit of desire. You're listening because you want to learn more about yourself, learn about how other people are handling situations, and that's what the show is about. So know yourself, love yourself, forgive yourself, cut yourself some slack. That's a big one for me. And heal. Heal yourself. Hang out in your EQ. It's cool. And then pull yourself out and wipe your knees and move forward, because life is to be lived.
And stop comparing yourself to others.
Oh, God, that's a hard one.
Oh, it's like, well, you know, like when my kids were growing up, well, my friends didn't have to do this, and my friends don't mm-hmm. have to, you know, their yep. parents do this for them. And I, you know what? I
yep.
said, good for them.
They're not my kid.
Then this is not their,
right.
this not, we're not talking about them. We're talking about you.
Right.
And we're talking about our house rules, and we're talking about our, you know, I'm talking about kids at this point. So, you know, you have to accept the good and the bad about yourself, because we all, that's a yin and yang. We have light and dark in every single one of us. And you have to accept both sides. You can't just expect yourself to be light all the time, because it's not the right balance. It's not real. Do you know what I mean?
I would argue that, but I think that's a different show.
Well, no, arguing, like you said, allowing yourself to be going to the quagmire, it's
yeah.
the same thing.
Yeah.
It's allowing
yeah.
yourself to accept
but
the
I
things
think,
about you that you may not approve of.
I think when you get to the acceptance phase, you no longer have a quagmire.
Right, but when through that acceptance,
through that, yeah.
you have to accept that side,
yeah.
or it's not complete. And I've seen
right.
this happen. Like people, oh, they can name off the things they love about themselves. It's really difficult to name off the things they don't like about themselves.
Oh, see, I see it the opposite. On a professional level, I see it opposite. It's super easy.
It's easy for them to see the bad parts in someone else.
Yeah, see, I don't see that on a professional level.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do. I see them picking people apart, and I say, okay, can we talk about why you fell in love with this person, why you love, you know, you may not love them at this very moment in time.
Right.
Because they're having issues, obviously. But you have to make this checklist, you know,
yeah.
and focus on the good part. But I think we're told to focus on the good part too much sometimes, like... You're not following me
I'm
at all.
I'm not following you at all, because I've never experienced that. I've experienced people who are, I suck, I'm worthless. Even my parents told me I suck, I'm worthless, I'm not good at anything. It's so much easier to be negative. I'm fat. My boobs aren't big enough. My, you know, men are notorious for not having big enough biceps. I hear that one all the time from the guys. My shoulders are, I'm not tall enough. I'm, you know, I think... I've never heard it the other way around.
What I'm talking about is when I'm speaking to them and I'll say, okay, so what's great about you? Let's talk about what's great about you. What's great? And they can list off things.
Yeah.
They're very easy to judge others as far as pointing out what they don't like about other people. But you ask them to point, you know, when you go and say, okay, so what's good about this person? It's uncomfortable for them because they have to accept that other side. So it goes on either way, whether you're, you know, putting yourself down, you have to ask them, so what's great about yourself? It's hard for them to accept that. So what I'm trying to say is you have to accept the yin and the yang. You
yeah.
have to accept both sides, because we do have both sides in us.
So in the grieving stage, I'm going to pull us back, and we're kind of touching the acceptance, but we're putting the cart before the horse and for some of our listeners. The acceptance stage is where you finally get it. You've gone through it. You've gone through the ups and downs. It was a death. Now what? It's not really depression. It's not necessarily happy, but you're facing whatever the terms are.
Mm-hmm.
You might kind of feel melancholy or numb, you know, but it's not stoic. It's, okay, this is reality. It's definitely the understanding of what the situation is, that it's absolutely real, and you can start seeing the facts, and you can start seeing the pain associated with whatever that is, but you're not sitting in your emotional quagmire and pouting anymore. You might cry a little bit. you might, you know, you might have a little touch of some of the other stages, but it's very light. It's not so extreme. It's not so heavy. It's not so in the moment. Acceptance is where you want to be in the end. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's comfortable, which
right.
I think people misunderstand. And I think that's where the whoopee phase becomes a little bit of denial, because now you're in the whoopee phase and everything feels good
better.
And it's vibrant and fun and exciting. But it's not
it's
really
not
acceptance.
Really what you want.
Right.
You're just you're just going through the motions. And you're watching, to be honest, you're kind of watching what other people, how they react when they're in that situation. You feel sometimes subconsciously, again, you're not aware of it, that this is what you're supposed to do when you get divorced.
Right.
You're supposed to go out and buy a sport car and have a model girlfriend because everybody else does.
Right.
So if you don't, then you're not in that process.
And I have to apologize to my male listeners. You know, that's the typical... stereotypical male response to a divorce, but to, you know,
there's other
female version is looking for the bad boy, the naughty bad boy who rides the motorcycle, who
dyes
her
hair, gets tattoos, goes and spends money on a facelift, tummy tuck,
that
kind of stuff.
So, you know,
that's our sport car.
That's our sports car, exactly. Tucking up Billy.
And again, where does that come from?
It's
judgment.
Fear. Judgment and fear. So it's definitely, you know, we're all going to go through it once, twice, for some of us, a few times.
And relationships evolve. They really, you know, when you first meet someone.
It's hot and heavy. And
it's hot and heavy and, you know, everything's wonderful, everything's great, your heart is full.
You're exploring, you're loving.
And what happens when things start to settle down. And men and women both do this. I'm not just including men on this. They settle down.
They get comfortable.
They get comfortable. And some of the things that you felt may have been important activity in your life, sex, might be a little bit less. And then you feel, oh, well, they don't love me anymore. This is all self-talk.
It's all feeling valued.
It is. And some people need certain things to feel valued.
Mm-hmm.
Men, I know, on most part, not all of them, do love in a more of a physical way, where women love in a more emotional way. Women need to have an emotional, some sort of emotional attachment. Not all,
mental,
again.
Mental, emotional. I think women are very complex.
Right. Men are very physical. So in some aspects, men and women be like, oh, that's all. He thinks that fixes everything. You know, like I call it the magic wand. It might be, you know, the magic wand for some people. That's wonderful. But it's not the magic wand for everyone.
Right.
So, but that person, whether it be male or female, feels the closest to you. And so they keep going with that because that's the way they feel close to you and loved.
Right. Connected.
And then when people are talking to me like that, I'm like, I know exactly what the problem is, communication.
Right.
And that is a lot of problems in the we do grow. We change.
Yep.
Our wants and our needs are different. Their wants and needs are different. You have to communicate with each other and grow and evolve with each other. And you're going to and allow yourself to have those moments that aren't, you know, that happy. But as long as you can bring it round and communicate, you can get through those stages and evolve and change together. And that's a beautiful thing when you can see that happen.
Yeah, and it definitely takes work and awareness on both parts.
It does.
As to knowing yourself, loving yourself, forgiving yourself, and healing.
Right.
And you cannot take ownership on other people's stuff at all. It has absolutely nothing to do with you. You have your own path. And you can intertwine with other people, but at the end of the day, you can't control how they think, feel, respond,
and
or
a lot of
react.
People, like, you know,
so.
I've gone through this myself in my own, own relationship where I'm just trying to fix it. I'm just, you know, just constantly focusing on, okay, what did I do to make this person upset.
But what you're doing now, and I've watched you kind of evolve over the last couple of years, mm-hmm. is you're lessening and starting to mm-hmm. acknowledge that fixer mother hen behavior. And it's not that it's coming from a place of
bad. But
it's beautiful, it's not.
It goes into an area sometimes where it's an OCD issue.
Right.
Where, you know, I'm trying too hard. And sometimes you just can't fix everything.
No, and you can't. And, you know, that within itself is a great show to have.
Yeah.
Talking about OCD. And I almost wanted to talk about OCD and controlling behaviors today, but I think we're going to save that one because that's going to be a very deep conversation.
It is, and I really would like to have more people call in and more people
be
there because we want to hear from you. We're doing this show for you. We're not doing it for me and Rusty can sit here and chat and yak anytime, you know. But we're doing this because of our experience to help you get through that stage or get through that quagmire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, build that bridge for you to step over that quagmire. And this is what this show is about. It's about you and about you evolving. So we want to hear from you. You know, call in. We have the chat line. If you don't want to be on the air live, you can ask us on the chat line. You can even shoot us an email. You know, what do you want to talk about? What do you want to hear about? What do you want to learn more about?
That's
Give
what
us
we're
a
here
shout
for.
Out, and we will find those people for you.
So one of the things that I wanted to, talk about, especially with the grief cycle, because it's very intense, and I think I am such a visual person that I think of it as a very fluid experience. And if you were to think of different colored water flowing in and out of a river, you know, each color would demonstrate a different part of the cycle. And that's how I see it.
Mm-hmm.
So coming from my personal experience, you know, certain situations and certain actions and certain adversities, Amy knows me mm-hmm. super well, and, you know, my book will be coming out, so this will make more sense to other people, but certain things will actually trigger past events, which makes the grief cycle more difficult to weed through, I think.
Yeah.
You know, my recent breakup, I had to take 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and go through my grief cycle. I knew what I was doing. I knew what I had to do for myself. 10 years ago, probably would not have, you know, been able to go through that cycle as quickly. But I think that there are times where we are triggered from other stuff. And for me, I had to acknowledge that it wasn't about the person or the person's actions. What it triggered for me was abandonment, feeling used, feeling neglected.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really monumental period for me because I'm like, oh, my God, it really wasn't about this person.
And that's when I learned that I had to let you
stay
in quagmire for a little while.
That was hard for you.
It was very,
very hard
for
you.
Me.
But I had to be there. And But as I was sitting in my AQ, I really had to break down to figure out what it was that made this breakup so painful. Yes, it's very possible he did cheat on me. Fine. Never been cheated on. So I didn't, you know, that's a new one. It was a very short relationship, so why the depth of emotion?
Mm-hmm.
It was because I was abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And that triggered that. So that process, going through that grieving cycle and really acknowledging those pieces and going and coming out at the end going, it had absolutely nothing to do with this guy. Nothing.
Mm-mm.
It had to do with something that was deeper inside of me and what it triggered from the past. So that, I think, is key to really going through the grief cycle is, you know, it's not just that particular situation. It's accumulation of
mm-hmm.
your history in life. So does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Another thing, too, that I find, you know, like with people like me, they'll hammer stuff into you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few people in my life that do that, and I don't want to be that person.
Right.
So I will say to Rusty, If I'm, you know, if I'm stepping in an area you don't want, just tell me no. Put your hand up. Well,
yep.
You know, put the brakes on. Because I'm trying so hard to help her because I love her that sometimes you can just overwhelm people. And
right.
You have to know when to back
right.
off. But I kept checking in. You okay? Yep, I'm good. Okay, as long as you're saying you're good.
Yep.
If you need me, I'm here. If you need
yep.
me for anything, I'm right here.
But it's the process, and that's
mm-hmm.
the piece, you know, and you've recently gone through, you know,
mm-hmm.
actually a couple of deaths
mm-hmm.
you had, and that was a huge process for you because it not only had historical meaning in your life,
mm-hmm.
but it was also futuristic meaning now that your grandchild's here, the
mm-hmm.
great-grandmother's not.
Mm-hmm.
And even though you're not going through the hot and heavy part of the grieving cycle, there's still little...
There's little snippets, and
little
you know,
snippets.
It's okay to have those little snippets,
yep.
but the acceptance part is key, is accepting it, that it's okay for you to have those moments as long as you know how to work through them and get to the other side, because they are learning lessons. For instance, you know, I had to learn with Rusty and a couple other of my friends, I can't fix everything.
Nope.
I'm not always the right person to fix it. And that was, you know, that was big for me. And but then again, it also releases guilt from me.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I know, okay, I know that she knows that I'm here for her.
Yep.
And she will tell me when she needs me. So it's releasing the guilt of, well, what could I have done better for her? You know what I mean? So it released a guilt for me that she probably didn't even realize or I didn't realize.
But I think in some ways you were going through the process as well, as we all do in friendship, because we
mm-hmm.
don't want to see our friends go through hurt. We don't want to see
right.
our friends have these adverse situations, which it happens. That's part of
the
living.
But you have to leave them their choices, because it is their
right.
choices.
It's their path.
And that's, you know, I've been a practitioner in my own business for 3 years. Before that, I would be, you know, I thought I had the solution all the time. Now
mm-hmm.
that
right.
I've dealt with other, so many diverse situations, I'm just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
They really know how to heal themselves.
Yep.
They just need a, what's the word?
I'm a gardener, so I plant seeds. Maybe
you plant seeds, but it's
what's your
validating.
Metaphor?
Validating.
Ooh, I love validation.
Validation.
The cosmic
that's
feedback
happens
for.
Without either, you know, without
mm-hmm.
the patient knowing it, and that you know, they don't need to know that. But it's like, for instance, a funny thing about tarot cards. Okay, when you read tarot cards,
mm-hmm.
their energy is pulling out that card. I'm just an interpreter.
It's
I'm
amazing.
Just an interpreter,
yeah.
but I'm interpreting ancient symbolism.
Right.
And but their energy is pulling that card out. So. It's them that they really know what's going on. I'm just interpreting it to them in a different way so they can understand it. Does that make sense to you?
Translating, for those of us who are geeks and very scientifically minded, there is, we know subconsciously what to expect and how to deal with situations. And the reason why we're here, it's said, is to consciously become aware of that information. And that's our lesson, and that's why we're here, is to learn to become more conscious.
Not
versus
subconscious.
Subconscious, or droney, or as I call, Autobot. And the tarot thing still freaks me out because there's so many times it's come true, and I'm like, whoa. All right. Next.
Well, the other theory that I've heard, which I just starting to read about, and it's intriguing me,
okay.
is some of these traits, these bad self-talks, can be not just handed down from verbally hearing it, but through DNA.
Yeah.
So you could
Absolutely.
Have
Absolutely.
A depth of an emotion from a great-great-grandfather or grandmother.
What's interesting about that, and I'll actually support that, because there is scientific evidence
is.
That proves when you're pregnant, your child will absorb whatever emotions you're... So in my case, it was a very stressful pregnancy. And she's a great kid. I love her to death. But she can be a little stressed
mm-hmm.
quickly
mm-hmm.
for a 7-year-old. But because I was in a constant state of stress and worry, the hormones... and the chemicals that I was producing, I was actually, and it's no different than drinking too much coffee when you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So putting that together, people go, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. I never thought of
and
it that
way. And I totally agree because I have four children. They're alike in a lot of ways and different in a lot of ways. The ones that, the one child that is completely like organized and all, you know, completely comfortable with herself is the one child that I actually planned. You know,
right.
We went to the doctor, we went off the birth control, you
right,
know, it was
right.
this big, fluffy, beautiful place. And my fourth child, not that I don't, I love all my children the same, but they were different situations. My fourth child was not expected.
Right.
And
right.
she's very emotional.
Yeah,
and I was very emotional because I was like,
Oh my God,
I'm 38 years old, I'm what? Have another kid? What do you, what? Really?
Yeah.
You know.
Those genes this way.
You know, and my older two, I was in a bad relationship. So, you know, they have their own set of insecurities.
Right.
But I've also noticed a lot of it. I notice in my mother, my father, my grandmother, my grandfather.
Yeah.
You know, the same trait. What I'm trying to teach people to do now is to break that chain. You are not that. You have a choice. You don't have to be part of that DNA
right.
chain. You can
right.
you can break the chain, and I have broken the chain. I'm not going to pass this on to my children,
right?
You know, and
right.
that's really, you know, that's another, could be another whole show, but
yeah,
gets,
when we start talking to, when you interview me for my book,
okay,
that'll be great because it's a lot of what I talk about is breaking cycles and abuse
mm-hmm.
and
not using it as a crutch. Well, you know,
right.
that's in my family, so that's the way it is. It doesn't have to be that way.
Right. Exactly. So we have a few minutes left of the show, and again, hopefully this was enough of an education for you so that you can, you know, expand your mind a little bit and thought process and be more loving and forgiving of yourself, because at the end of the day, that's all you are is love and beauty, and, you know, we live right now, this minute, this very second, and I have to say that I'm very grateful that you've taken your time to listen to us chatter along about the grief cycle. We're all familiar with it, and sometimes we just need a nice little reminder that, hey, it's okay. Sit in your quagmire. Sit in that emotional swamp of yuck.
Just
but
don't stay there too long.
Don't stay there too long, because you know what? It's
not a destination. It's a stop along the way.
It's a stop along the way, exactly. It's not a permanent house. It's, hey, okay, I've been hurt here, and I've been hurt there, and this hurts. Now what? All right, cool.
You create your destination. Why don't you take this with you? I want you to sit down, and I want you to concentrate on your most supreme destination.
Like, Honolulu!
Not destination physically. Where you want to be in life.
Cheshire
Cat. What you want to be. Destination can be part of it. Where do you want to live? What do you want to do for a living? What do you want your life to look like?
Who you really are in your authentic self, and trust that, because you are beautiful, and you know what?
You can
be all
there.
The nonsense and baggage, we're going to go through it, but what's really cool is we get to go through it together.
Mm-hmm.
Life is to be lived. Life is to be loved. You are to be loved. So
mm-hmm.
thank you for joining us on Living and Thriving with Rusty and fabulous co-host Amy. And we'll talk to you next week. The cool news is we have the Spirit Lawyer on, which...
I cannot wait.
Hold on to your seatbelt,
Spirit
girlfriend.
And lawyer in the same sentence. I'm intrigued.
He is fabulous, and you just want to bottle him up and just carry him in your pocket. He's just wonderful. So very blessed to have him on next week. And, yes, some people feel that it's a contradiction to have spirit and lawyer in the same sentence, but I am deeply, profoundly amazed at what he does and
now,
how
I'm
fabulous
intrigued
he is.
Because that, you know, all these, you know, I don't know, new things. They're new to me, let's put it that way.
Well,
but,
that's why you listen to the show. So happy hump day to all of you. We love you. You are blessed. Have a good night. Have a good morning. Have a good day. And we'll talk to you next week.
And remember, give yourself a big fat hug.
Yeah.
You are loved.
Give an extra one from me. Because if I could hug you all, that would be awesome. All right. Love you lots. Peace out. Talk to you next week on Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Rusty. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.